We inspect them at the dock when they arrive to make sure we don't have bugs in the museum, that kind of thing. There are all these behind the scenes things that we have to think about.
This week on Pop of Culture.
They often take the assignment and think hard about where the object was made, maybe when it was made. They find creative ways to think about flowers to order from around the world sometimes. So,
Art in Bloom at the David Owsley Museum of Art.
And more coming up.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and by sustaining members of IPR. Become a member today at indianapublicradio.org.
From Indiana Public Radio, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Kara Duquette. This weekend only, a local art exhibit combining randomly chosen works with the joy of springtime flowers. It's called Art in Bloom. To explain, we've brought in the curator responsible. We're here today with Rachel Buckmaster. She's the associate director of DOMA, the David Owsley Museum of Art. And we're really happy to have you here today, Rachel.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. We've invited you here to talk about an event at the DOMA that the community is invited to. But first, could you talk to us a little bit about your background with Muncie and the DOMA?
Oh, sure, sure. I was born in Muncie, grew up here, actually an alum of Ball State, graduated in 1995 with a political science degree, of all things.
Nice.
And I was left Muncie about 20 years or so and moved back in 2016 when I saw a dream job posted, which was to work at the David Owsley Museum of Art, which was a place that meant a lot to me growing up here as a kid. Lots of field trips and good memories. So
that's wonderful. So you have a dear love for Muncie.
Yeah.
As I do.
I do. I still have family here. It's been great.
Well, today I'd like you to talk to us too about Art in Bloom, which is coming up really soon.
It is. It's just around the corner. So it's an annual event at the David Owsley Museum of Art. We have really grown to love the tradition. It started back at DOMA in 2015, but it's been a concept that a lot of museums have used and kind of made their own in different ways. For us, it has sort of evolved into a real community-based event. So all of the activities, the extended hours, the reception, all of it's free to the community and completely open to the public, which we really enjoy. So very family-friendly. So if you haven't been to Art in Bloom at DOMA, the concept is we select those works of art throughout the museum, randomly assign them to the designers, and then they use their own skills, their own creative talents to interpret the assigned work of art through flowers. I think they all take a different angle. One of the most rewarding things has been sort of recruiting a new designer to the project. It sounds really intimidating to them, but then the feedback we get is it helps them to think differently about their own work. Seeing something that they've created in the museum, and I think us really embracing the idea of flower design as art helps to just get, I mean, every year I'm really kind of blown away by what they create. So that interpretation could be literal sometimes. Some designers really think more about the concept or do research on the artist themselves and incorporate that into the interpretations, but so it's a chance to just see lots of flowers in the galleries and next to the work of art that they're interpreting.
And it goes beyond a bouquet,
yes,
right?
Bouquets, yes,
are beautiful.
Right.
But I would call them floral sculptures,
right,
perhaps.
Yeah, definitely.
How do you get your designers?
Yeah.
How do they get the piece they work with?
Oh, that's such a, I'm glad you asked, because one thing that we're not always good at making clear to the public is the designers do not pick the artwork. that they are assigned to respond to. So we have a planning committee, some volunteers on our Friends Advisory Council, and along with the staff, we sort of strategize in the fall what works of art in the museum might be fun to feature. I will say there's a little bit of strategy in spreading things out throughout the museum so people have a reason to get in all of the corners and go through all of the galleries. And then we do a random drawing. So, yes. So every designer thinks they probably were assigned the hardest one, but and they're all pretty challenging. So, and they kind of range from sculpture to paintings, all kinds of content. And they get a couple of months to think, brainstorm, and come up with ideas, and they all have their own approach. So,
so are they at liberty to use anything besides flowers?
You know, we give them a little bit of flexibility. I mean, we don't want, like, water features, let's say.
Okay,
or we say, no electricity required, please. They're all given sort of a similar pedestal, but they, yeah, they're working with living flowers, fresh fresh items. I will say we inspect them at the dock when they arrive to make sure we don't have bugs in the museum, that kind of thing. There are all these behind the scenes things that we have to think about. But yeah, they're sort of free, and they often take the assignment and think hard about where the object was made, maybe when it was made. They find creative ways to think about flowers to order from around the world sometimes. So, yeah.
It's pretty amazing. I've had the opportunity to go a few times.
Yeah.
And last year, I know when you walked in the door, you could take your picture in a floral frame, which
We're
was
doing
so
that
much
again.
Fun.
Yeah.
So we took some selfies. And then also there was somebody stationed there who was happy to take our camera and take a picture for us.
Yes.
And I, you know, it's wonderful to go around and look at the art and respond to the floral artist response to the works. And but you said there are other things that you can do. Can you tell us a few?
Yeah. So we have learned that people enjoy just kind of casual activities. So we have a couple of people playing piano in just in a spot where people can pass through or they can sit and listen. We have some people doing demonstrations. So another not participating florist is going to come and sort of do some things live, some live arrangements that people can watch and sort of ask her about her thoughts and process. I think we're probably going to be able to raffle off some things. And then we have docent-led tours. We have this year, actually, a special workshop led by local artist Jean Ziegler, who makes these really incredible paper flowers.
Oh.
And so that's a free workshop, but registration required, because we think it will probably fill up. And then all sorts of activities for kids, too. So,
well, it sounds like there's something for everybody to do. I was going to ask you, too, what do you think makes Art in Bloom so successful and continues?
You know, it's fun for us because, you know, we work there every day, work hard not to take the beauty of the space for granted, but having the chance to see people come in and it's sort of like that thing when you have someone over and then you kind of look at your place and with a new set of eyes, you know, and you realize, oh, it's so, like, sculpture court is just amazing. So what's fun is seeing people come in for the first time. One of my favorite things last year was there was a family that came through on Saturday, and then I saw them come back on Sunday. And so once people visit DOMA, I think they're happy to return. And so I think it's just grown in popularity. I see that it's a tradition that some people look forward to. I have a friend who always brings her mother and grandmother after church on Sunday, and it's just become a family tradition. So I think just, you know, consistency and continuing to offer more and more to the community, and having it be family friendly and free. We have a reception also on Saturday night. That's also free. And it feels good to us to see just a really diverse group of people coming. So I think that tradition has helped it to grow.
Well, that's makes a lot of sense. And I feel like going to the museum, you always find something new. There's so much in the museum to see. So I want you to give us a little more specifics, if you could, about your extended hours for this event.
Sure. So just to get our regular hours out there.
Yeah.
We are closed on Sundays and Mondays, although the administrative staff works on Mondays. That's a great day for us to get some projects done behind the scenes and that kind of thing. But then public hours are Tuesday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 4:30, and then Saturdays from 1:30 to 4:30. And we keep those same hours all summer, year-round. You know, we'll be closed for a couple of holidays, that kind of thing. So Art in Bloom weekend, special hours, so we're open from 1 to 7 on Saturday the 18th, and then 1 to 5 on Sunday. I think it's the only Sunday of the year that we're open.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I would mention, too, we've been billing the weekend as also sort of simultaneously the last opportunity to see our current special exhibition.
Oh, yeah.
Which is Beyond the Medici. It's the Huckel Family Collection, which is this really incredible exhibition of works from like Baroque era Florence.
It's amazing.
Really great. And so it's been very popular, and we just got word permission to extend that. So people can see that weekend, but we've now, we'll be able to have it on view through June 29th, I think is the closing day. So that's another reason to visit in the summer.
Oh, yeah. Even more reason to go. So
yeah, thank you.
That is going to be great. I hope a lot of people come out to see Art
too.
In Bloom.
Thank you.
And we're really looking forward to it. And I'm so glad you came here to talk to us today.
Thank you. Yeah, we hope to see everyone there.
Rachel Buckmaster is the Associate Director of the David Owsley Museum of Art. I'm Kara Duquette.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. We're going to listen back to an interview with self-described comedy rock geek Mikey Mason. He joined us in studio earlier this year. He spent more than a decade as a full-time stand-up comedian, appearing on some of the biggest stages, but it just wasn't enough. He had to show his geekier side. So he picked up his guitar and started writing songs about his favorite subjects: fantasy, science fiction, cats, video games, and Dungeons and Dragons. 14 albums and 6 EPs later, Mikey Mason is living the comedy rock geek dream. Mikey Mason, welcome to Pop of Culture.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Let's start with the comedy part. When did you realize that you were, I should be a comedian funny?
I think I always thought I should be, and I think a lot of people always think they should. They're like, they'll say something funny, I should be a comedian, ha ha. But I was a musical comedian, so I still don't think I'm cut out for stand-up comedy, although I'm much better prepared for it than I was when I went in. I started with songs, and I've always been a songwriter, and so I had 25 or so minutes of very funny songs. I was in Ball State's improv comedy troupe. I was in the first performing cast of ABSO. When we started, it was ABSO Lunacy.
Yeah.
You know, we first started performing in teacher's college, and then by the time I, you know, graduated college, they were performing in Pruess Hall. So I've long known that I can make people laugh, but it was at that point where I had made this decision that I'm just going to be a stand-up comic and started making things happen. And it was through that I realized that stand-up comedy is creating the illusion of having a conversation without having a conversation.
Yeah.
And being able to make all those jokes that you can crack your friends up with, but do it through this one-sided conversation, and then have people still maintain the illusion that there's a conversation going on, even though their part of it is just to laugh.
Mm-hmm. So early on with the improv group, were you doing kind of parodies of songs you already knew? Were you writing then as well?
So when ABSO first started out, they weren't an improv comedy troupe. We were a sketch comedy troupe.
Hmm.
But yes, I did parodies. Just me and Sean, Sean Smith, the other guy who did the music in the comedy troupe. But that was generally just when it was the two of us on stage. So.
After you decided that just the straight stand-up thing wasn't enough, you went viral in 2011, before viral was really even a thing, before people were talking about viral all the time, with an ode to the sci-fi show Firefly.
Yeah.
Tell me about how that came to be.
So I watched much later than it actually aired, than the one less than one season that actually aired. I watched it much later on DVD, and I binge watched it and loved it. And then I watched the movie that had been made in 2005, Serenity, or 2000, whenever it came out on DVD in 2005. And I was making jokes with a friend, and then I just decided that I was going to write this song called She Don't Like Firefly to test out in the geekier waters. And it was just basically to put my foot in the water to see how things would do. And it went viral. Now, viral back then was a much milder statement. You know, now TikTok, something will take something to 4 billion views or whatever. Back then, I think I got a 250,000 views. But it was retweeted by cast members from the TV show. I made a video of it, got retweeted by cast members of video of the TV show, and it convinced me that there was a market for that. So I did a Kickstarter to start an album, and it met that goal, and I recorded that album, and I told my wife, because she's always been absolutely instrumental in me transitioning from work to comedy, from part-time comedy to full-time comedy. And she's always been super smart about the planning. She's, you know, she never said don't quit your day job, but she always, you know, but don't quit your day job, you know, until it's time. She's like, we'll cross those bridges when we come to them, and we won't burn them. but she said, all right, I'll give you a year, because it basically meant starting completely over. I was still doing stand-up comedy as my full-time job, but I was also paying to go to conventions, paying for my own admission to conventions, paying for my own hotel to go to conventions, and asking for performance time and building an audience. And at the end of a year, she said, I'll give you a year that will pay for it. And if at the end of the year you can't make it pay for itself, then no. And it did. And here I am.
Wow. Do you mind sharing a little bit of that song for us?
Oh, sure. Yeah. She's got a good job. She works hard for the money. She looks like a model, like a Playboy bunny. She likes comic books and video games. She even plays Warhammer 40K. But she don't like Firefly. That's why I had to say goodbye. She don't like Firefly, so she's gone, gone, gone. There's a little of the song.
I love it. I love it. What inspires you to write a song? Let me into your creative process a little bit.
Well, it's much different now. Back when I was a student at Ball State University, Tom Thornburg was my poetry professor, and he once told me that what I had were dangerous gifts, and I didn't understand what he meant then. I think I know what he meant now, and that is, at that time, I was particularly beholden to being inspired. And what he taught us is that knowing the craft of something will get you through all of the times where you're not inspired. Now, maybe a well-crafted poem or a well-crafted song might not be as great as a well-crafted and inspired poem, but it's better than no poem, and it will teach you how to do more. And so now there are times when I'm absolutely inspired and fired up to write it. You know, something will hit me, and I'm like, this is going to be a song or whatever. But I put out a song a week on my Patreon, patreon.com/MikeyMason. And
for those that don't know what Patreon is, can you say?
So Patreon is a place where you can support artists. Mm-hmm. Now, way back in the Middle Ages, they had patrons who would pay a painter or a sculptor or a musician, and they would give them a wage and a place to live and materials, and they would get works of art in exchange. They would literally be patrons of the arts. And Patreon is the modern equivalent of that, only instead of looking for one patron, it's everybody can give what they can afford, and it's kind of crowdsourcing the patronage. So in my case, for $1 a month, I put out a song a week. Now, occasionally they're cover songs, or occasionally they're parodies, but last year I put out literally 67 songs on the nose. That's my average per year.
Wow.
And 52 of them were original songs. So that means what? 15 of them weren't. 15 of them were covers or parodies. And so, you know, my inspiration these days is I sit down, and when I don't feel inspired, I'm like, I give myself an assignment. What am I going to write a song about? I write about things that I like. I'm on a podcast called In the Verse with Mark Gunn, who is a sci-fi-ish writer. He does Celtic music that's inspired by science fiction and fantasy.
Wow.
Yeah. And so we started off by watching all the episodes of Firefly and then writing a song about each episode. And that was the podcast. And then because we had ran out of songs, we decided we're going to do 10 more episodes. We're going to just get inspired by these random things. So we've done episodes of Doctor Who. We've done old Dungeons & Dragons cartoon. We did the Hobbit movie from 1977-8, Rankin and Bass animated Hobbit movie.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's about giving yourself the assignment and having the permission to fail, you know. You're going to write a song. It doesn't have to be good. And it doesn't have to be the final draft. It just needs to be there.
Yeah.
And then but the better you are at your craft, the more practice you put in, the better you are at getting it closer to where it should be on that first try.
Mm-hmm. But that seems like a lot of pressure, especially if you're doing it on a podcast. There aren't that many redos.
We don't write the songs on the podcast. So
we'll
watch the episode or whatever, and then we discuss it from an artistic standpoint, mm-hmm. and then we break off. And we each write and record our demo song, and then we come back and edit the demo song at the end. So they hear the discussion about how we're feeling and how we're getting inspired by it, what we find inspiring, and then they hear the song we wrote about it after, and then we move on to another episode.
Wow, that's very cool. That is very cool. You take the show on the road a lot, performing at Gen Cons and Dragon Cons and various other cons.
Yeah.
What is that experience like?
The cons where I'm known, it's very cool. The cons where I'm not known, it's a discovery experience. I love to get a new crowd, to get new people to buy into the stuff. I'm not your typical convention performer because I cut my teeth on stand-up comedy. I have a pretty good stage presence, having the experience that I have. So I'm pretty good on stage. I'm pretty comfortable on stage. And so it's different than a lot of most conventions. You'll see a lot of hobbyists and amateurs, and they're fantastic because, I mean, they're doing it for passion and love. But I'm literally a professional. I make my money doing this. This is my living. So seeing new people get introduced to that, there are songs where I know who you are in the audience because I watch your faces and I mean, they light up. They're falling out.
Yeah.
I have a deep and abiding love for beer. I'm actually wearing a brewery shirt today. I have a beer and distilled spirits. And there are times walking down a convention hall where people just hand me unopened bottles. Literally, they just, and I'm, yay. I've had people bring me baked goods, bottles of scotch, bottles of whiskey. I've had people bring me beers from other states.
Wow.
I've had people find out that I love beer at Gen Con, and that was their first time seeing me, so they made sure they come to another show and bring their favorite beer that they brought from their state. It's fantastic.
That is not a bad deal at all.
It is not.
In fact, did you just mention it so that people are... that listen if they see you.
My favorite pie is blackberry. second favorite is pecan, but if you really press me, it would be orange bourbon pecan. But pecan in any, you know, I'm just...
I see what you did there. What songs get the biggest response when you're out at the cons?
The songs that really get the biggest response are the ones that are surprisingly sincere. I have a song called The Opposite of Cool. And it is about how I still say it a lot. I hope I'm never jaded enough to be cool.
Mm.
I hope that I'm always the same sincere, geeky person that I am. And I understand that that makes me not cool. And it's my theme song. I didn't know I was writing my theme song when I wrote it. When I wrote it, it literally took me 3 days to be able to play it all the way through without crying. And that's, I guess that's how you know. And my youngest was in seventh grade at the time. And I finally cut the demo and I went to pick them up from seventh grade. And I put I said, you want to hear my new song? And back then our car was old enough. I had a CD player. Mm-hmm. And they said, sure. Yeah, whatever. And facing the phone. And I put the disc in and hit play. And after the first couple lines, they shut their phone off and just sat there and listened. And then at the end, looked up at me and said, how do you know so much about me?
Wow.
And that's when I knew it was going to read. It was going to be, you know, I thought for sure this was just going to be something for me. And then all of a sudden I knew it was going to read. Because when, you know, when I feel it, and I was nearing 50 at the time, and when my then seventh grader felt it, that means it's going to translate across all ages and all age groups, so, and probably a lot of demographics as well.
Could you please play a little bit of that?
Oh, sure.
For us? Thank you.
I care a little too much, I laugh a little too loud, I look a touch out of place, but still blend in with the crowd. And I was always picked last for everything at my school. I am the opposite of cool. And I still read comic books, I've got a long box or nine, got a house full of cats, I post their pictures online. I wear the shirt of the band whose concert I'm going to. I am the opposite of cool. I get a little too mad, I cry a little too much, and I return every text, but I still feel out of touch. I get excited for things and want to share them with you. I am the opposite of cool. I love some movies you don't and don't like some that you do. I'm more a red shirt than Kirk and I still love Doctor Who. And I know which Hogwarts house that I'd want sorted into. I am the opposite of cool. Sorry, you're getting the whole thing. I got my head in the clouds, I got my feet on the ground, got my nose to the grindstone, but there's no one around. Got my head screwed on straight, got my priorities straight, and every breath is a fight, but I'm feeling great. I don't have too many friends, and I still answer my phone. I just don't know how to dance, unless I'm drunk or alone. I shouldn't care what you think, but I still probably do. I am the opposite of cool. I am the opposite of cool.
Oh, that was great. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
That was wonderful. And people can see you perform locally. Mm-hmm. You perform at the Fickle Peach, you perform at the Herat.
I do.
Do you test out new materials? What's kind of the vibe if people come and see you locally?
Normally, when I'm playing locally, I play mostly cover songs. People don't, nobody cares about my original music at home. You know, I have pockets of fans, and trust me, it's weird enough for me to say that, but to say it in front of other people, but I pockets of fans in Missouri and Arkansas and Virginia and North Carolina. But there's this, it's a beautiful and gracious gift to have the kind of anonymity. You know, I'm still locally famous, but they think that I'm kind of and locally famous in air quotes, but they think that I'm a stand-up comic, you know,
yeah.
And I don't do that. I retired from stand-up comedy in 2019. Mm-hmm. So, you know, almost 5 years ago. And, but still I'm a stand-up comic to them. And, you know, so many people don't know or care that I make my money writing songs or performing convention. And that's cool. That's absolutely cool because it gives me a place where I can just, I'm just that guy,
yeah.
You know, I'm the guy who runs trivia. I'm the guy who,
yes.
You know, you know, you'll see him singing somebody else's songs at the Herat. I'm, you know, it's fun.
Yeah. And then, you know, in your spare time, you wrote a book.
Well, to be fair, I was asked by a publisher to write that book. in my spare time, I podcast and drink copiously. No. So I had a publisher friend who I'd run into at Con Carolinas every year, John Hartness from Falstaff Books. Mm-hmm. And every year, because my degree from Ball State's in creative writing. Mm-hmm. I was in the first class where you could get a creative writing degree.
Wow.
And I would always run into him and say, John, you know, one of these years I'm going to put this creative writing degree and make you read one of my submissions. And a few years ago, he said, you know, actually, I was going to talk to you about that. And I'm like, you know, I'm there with my wife. I'm like, what did I just step in? And he said, I read this book, and it was a book of song lyrics and stories. And I can't remember which famous music artist wrote it. But he said, I think that would be great for you. You know, we'll sell it at conventions. I want you to write a book of song lyrics and convention stories, and I'll publish it. And I was like, oh, okay, okay, sure. I was, you know, I kind of blew it off. I get home, in the back of my head, I'm like, he had to have been joking. He was joking. So I wrote a sample chapter and sent it to him and said, in case on the off chance you were serious, here's what the writing would be like. What do you think? And his response was, here's what I think. And he sent me a contract.
Whoa.
And he said, oh, and just so you know, I told three different audiences at that convention that I had signed you to write a book for me. then all of a sudden I was contractually obligated to write a book. And so I did, and turned it in 6 months early because that's what I do.
Wow.
I try and get things done and move on to the next thing. I'm not great at marketing, but I'm great at producing stuff. I'll put content out. That resulted in Confessions of a Geek Bard, which came out last June through Falstaff Press, Falstaff Books.
Where can people get more Mikey Mason?
MikeyMason.com.
There you go.
MikeyMason.com is the hub. You can order my book there. You can find links to all my music. Currently, my music is Pay What You Want on Bandcamp. When everything went to COVID, mm-hmm. And I lost all of my income because I couldn't perform anymore, I'd already been doing online shows every month anyway for about 5 years at that point. Mm-hmm. So I started relying very heavily on that, and I upped my Patreon game. But I also knew that people needed entertained because we're all stuck in our homes.
Yeah.
And so at that point, I made everything on my Bandcamp site, MikeyMason.bandcamp.com, pay what you want. If you can afford to pay me $10 for an album, pay me $10. If you can afford 20, if you can afford 50, great. If you can't afford, a dollar, okay, download it, enjoy it. If you don't like it, delete it. If you like it, share it, And when you can afford to do the equivalent of buying me a cup of coffee for it, do that. Mm-hmm. Go download it again. That's fine. That's awesome.
Yep. It's kind of the public media model.
Yeah, it is.
They've been doing that for
decades. I learned a long time ago that the people who are going to take care of you are going to take care of you.
That's right.
And the people who want to access your content for free are going to find a way to do so.
Mm-hmm. Before you go, we've been looking for the perfect theme song for Pop of Culture.
Sure, yeah.
Any thoughts?
It's Pop of Culture.
Pop of Culture.
Mm. See, now normally when I write to a... when I write stuff like that, I will do it as an assignment at home. How about we do like the end of the verse and I'll take a break and maybe I'll send you something.
I love that.
So if I did it now, you'd probably have to bleep me a lot. I mean, I can make up something great. Everybody would love it.
Well, we haven't had the opportunity to use our bleep button. That could be exciting.
Oh,
I don't think we've used that for a Pop of Culture.
All right, get your finger on the trigger, Tex. It's time to go. I know several words that will exercise your index finger there as you hit the dump button.
All right. Well, then, just if you could just kind of play us out. Maybe it's another one of your favorite tunes.
This is one of those songs that just kind of translates to most stages.
All right.
It sounds like it's going to start off blasphemous. It's really not.
Okay.
All right, so, okay. But it's going to sound it. All right. Keep your finger off the dump button. They say the real miracle of Jesus was having 12 close friends in his 30s. All my friendships now are just figuring out whose turn it is to cancel plans. And I'm so tired all the time. My back hurts all the time.
And I just cleaned my whole house and now it all needs cleaned again. But I finally understand what my mom was so upset about. I got a laundry pile and a real nice box I can't throw out. And I'm an adult now, so nobody can tell me what to do. Please tell me what to do. I'm always rushing to get somewhere I don't really want to be. I used to sneak out to go party. Now I sneak out of parties to go home. Now everything is strange, but I don't think anything has changed. And the front burner on the right's my favorite burner on the stove. And I finally understand what my mom was so upset about. I've got a bag of plastic bags and boxes that I can't throw out. And I'm an adult now, so nobody can tell me what to do. It's all right, laugh. Please tell me what to do. The other option is to cry. I want to be invited, but I just don't want to go. My life is mostly paying bills and telling myself no. And deleting all these emails. I've got 50 friggin' Tupperwares and not one matching lid. I've got at least a dozen boxes full of random power cords. And I don't want to cook, but I can't afford to eat out. I got a mushy veggie pile in my refrigerator drawer, but I think I understand what my mom was so upset about. I've got these bags of plastic bags and boxes I will never throw out, but I'm an adult now, and nobody can tell me what to do. Please tell me what to do. Seriously, is there like a Twitter thread I can follow? Because I don't know what to do. A Tumblr, is that still a thing? Please tell me what to... Give me a library book. We don't do that anymore. I don't know what to do. Sorry, Mom.
Yes! That was great. Mikey Mason, thank you so much for joining us in the studio.
I
appreciate
it. We're
going to hold you to that theme song.
All right, Michelle, I'll do that.
Self-described comedy rock geek Mikey Mason joined us in the studio earlier this year.
And he kept good on his promise to make us a theme song. We'll have that next week on the show. I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Kara Duquette. For What Are You Working On? We're here with local artist Jeff Brackett. Thank you so much for being here today, Jeff.
I'm so happy to be here. I'm glad that you invited me. Thanks.
Of course. We first met at Ball State when you were a professor in religious studies. And I think you were working on an immersive project.
Yes.
And religion and comics class.
It's true. I did immersive learning, one of those 15-credit courses that was out at the Kitzelman Center. Yeah, that was fabulous. It completely changed how I thought about teaching, about the classroom. And I never wanted to go back to a regular classroom after that. It was fantastic.
Well, that segues right into what I was going to ask you next. So could you tell us a little bit about how your artistic journey began?
Oh, yeah. I'll give you a short version. I took architectural drawing in high school, and that sort of suggests like the precision that I use in a lot of my art. But I didn't really keep up any sense of like drawing, just visual art. And actually, it was that immersive learning course. I had the students make their own comic. And so I said, well, I'm going to do one too. And so I started drawing then. And so that was spring of 2015, and that got me really interested, and from there I just started drawing more and more and more, and it just kind of took off from there.
Well, for those people who have not seen any of Jeff's work, your lines are just amazing. They just carry you through organic shapes at times. Can you talk a little bit about your inspiration for some of that?
Yeah, it's really difficult to talk about inspiration for these. It's really interesting, though, that you asked that. I saw like mandalas, right? So these round, and mandala just means round, right? So a circle, sorry. I started drawing those. That's what I started drawing in like October 2016. And so I just started expanding from there because those are very precise. And then I thought, like, well, I saw this thing online where somebody drew a line and then another one and another one right next to each other. So that as you go across the page, it starts to take on different shape because it's not always going to be totally straight, right? You're doing it freehand. And you just let the shape morph itself. And so that's what I started doing. In fact, I got to the point where I did one that was 36 by 60. Wow. I started on one end and just went all the way to the other side just to see what it would be like. And that kind of opened up new worlds. And then I just started playing with doing line work in lots of different ways. So even when I try to get away from lines, they're always there.
They find you.
Yes.
What about colors? When does the color come into this picture?
Yeah, I was working only with black ink for a long time. And then I thought, okay, I'll add a color and see how it goes. And then I thought, oh, that's not bad. And then I added another color. So I would maybe do two. I've done maybe as many as five, but I don't want to overwhelm people with lots of color. I want to focus more on the line and the shapes. Recently, though, I decided I'm not going to work with a lot of different colors. So I started painting, too, recently. Still lots of lines. And my favorite color right now, at least, is teal. And I love fluorescent orange for some reason. And the two together are fantastic. So I'm doing all kinds of experiments in my studio right now. And it gets into this thing called op art, right, where it basically creates almost optical illusion when you look at it. It kind of plays with your eyes. And
wow. That's those colors do vibrate with one another, the complementary colors.
Yes.
It's so fun to experiment with color and line, and I like that. I like taking new directions.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a show right now, an exhibition at Gordy Fine Art and Framing downtown, and I love it because, well, it's my work and I like to look at it, but it's, you know, and not bragging like that, but just that it's a good arrangement. I like the way everything is framed, the way it's arranged on the wall, and it shows a lot of my new work, and yeah, I really like that.
So I hear you have a studio in Muncie, and that there's an event coming up. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes, we've got an event coming up. It's in the Murray Building downtown, so where Murray's Jewelers are, but also it's above the Caffeinery, so lots of people know where that is. And I'm on the third floor. There are others on the second, but most of us are on the third floor. And we're having an open house event on Saturday from 12 to 3, so several artists will have their doors open, right? So studios will be open. People can come in, chat with us. There'll be light refreshments. Of course, there'll be items for sale if people want to buy anything. But it's really a way of kind of kicking off what we consider to be a new hub for artists in Muncie. You know, I mean, there are different ways, there are different places that have tried to do this with some success, but we're hoping that ours succeeds, of course. And there's a real synergy, right? We are in each other's studios, not all the time, but offering criticism is super helpful, right? To do that rather than, you know, I've got friends that I text images to and say, what do you think? Is it done? Does it need more work? Well, I mean, it's on a screen that's a couple inches, you know? So it's not as helpful as this critique in person.
That's wonderful. It's like, you know, many a movement, an art movement was made by groups of people sharing their art and what they're thinking and what they're doing. So you feel like moving in the studio, has it enriched your experience?
Yeah. In fact, okay, so I started off drawing another one of those 36 by 60 line drawings. I think it's one of the best ones I've done, and it's at Gordy right now.
Oh, nice.
But I did that and seriously thought, like, why do I have a studio? Really? Like, why do I have a studio? So I had some paper, kind of large, 40 by 50, and I taped it to the floor, and I took out tubes of paint, and I started literally squirting paint all over the paper and then dragging different things through it and throwing stuff at it. So I decided I needed to go away from this precision, the line work, and get super messy. And the idea was, I'm just going to play, right? Because when I think about my work too much, it doesn't lead to great results, right? Because all I'm concerned with is, what does the final product look like? I wanted to get out of my head, literally on the floor throwing paint around. And that's what led to a lot of new discoveries, right? And it led to basically what I've got on the walls right now. And every time I do something like that, I have sort of breakthrough moments. And then those lead to more and more and more, right? And that's why I'm experimenting now with teal and orange.
Well, I love the idea of art as play and playing and discovering new things. And I really am happy that you talked to us today. And I wondered if there's anything else you wanted to say about your work or your life.
Oh, I mean, I invite people to come visit me in my studio. Look, there's coffee downstairs. There are other places if you want to get something to eat. People can come over, have a mini tour. I'm happy to talk about my art, show them whatever they like.
Oh, that's wonderful. You get many dimensions. You get to hear from the artist what they were thinking and what they're doing. So if you want to see Jeff and his work and talk to him, you can find him at Gordy Fine Art and Framing Company in Muncie, Indiana. And your work's up until the end of the month?
It's up until, June 1st.
Till June 1st.
Yeah.
Or you can find him at the studio, his studio at the Murray Art Building.
Yes.
Where can we find you online, Jeff?
You can find me on my website, which is Jeffrey M, like Michael, bracket, bracket.com. On Instagram at Jeff Brackett Art. And on Facebook, Jeff Brackett Art.
Nice. Well, we'll check it out. Well, you should check it out. I've checked it out. It's pretty great.
Hey, Kara, it's time to look at all the great arts and culture happenings in and around the area. Why don't you kick us off?
Oh, yeah, I'm happy to. Art at the Murray is hosting an open studio event noon to 3 p.m. Saturday, May 18th at the Murray Building in downtown Muncie. The event will feature Chris Taylor Studio, Carrie Wright Silk, who we talked to.
Yes.
Dan Wright, Cassie Dunmeyer Creative, Jeff Brackett Art, and Kate Thorson. The artists will have their doors open and feature a wide array of artwork. You'll find Art at the Murray on Facebook.
That's going to be a great event. I'm really looking forward to that. Speaking of art, and we talked about it a little bit today, Art in Bloom takes over the David Owsley Museum of Art on the Ball State campus Saturday and Sunday, May 18th and 19th. Art in Bloom is an annual event celebrating springtime at the David Owsley Museum of Art through innovative floral interpretations created by regional designers. bsu.edu/DOMA has more info, including a paper flower workshop.
Ah, I totally signed up for that.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Very excited. Mound State Park in Anderson is having a star tour Saturday, May 18th, beginning at 8:30 p.m. The Muncie Astronomy Club will host this evening of fun and learning about our cosmos and a celebration of moon night.
You know what? The night sky has really been impressive lately, and I bet this is going to be just as exciting over at Mounds.
We have had a feast here in Indiana.
I know.
Did you catch the northern lights?
Well, a little bit. I'm in an area with like a lot of light, but I still saw some of the purples and pinks, and it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. Gas City will have its first Old 400 Open Air Market Saturday, May 18th. This celebration of makers will include baked goods, pottery, crafts, and other unique creations beginning at 10 a.m.
And the Belgian Horse Winery in Middletown has kicked off its summer concert series. Catch the Hunter Lee Band, a blues rock band, Wednesday, May 22nd. More bands and info available at BelgianHorseWinery.com.
The first I Made Rock and Roll Festival is Saturday, May 18th in downtown Indianapolis at the American Legion Mall. The Black Rock Festival will feature performances by Janelle Monáe, Gary Clark Jr., Robert Randolph Band, and many more. Presented by Gang Gang and 45, I Made Rock N Roll, that's an N, nroll.com is the place to go for more info. Do you have an event you want listeners to know about? Tell us all about it at indianapublicradio.org/popofculture.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and by sustaining members of IPR. Become a member today at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. This week's episode was produced by Luke Jones, who knows a thing or two about arranging, and hosted by me, Michelle Kinsey.
And me, Kara Duquette. We are a production of Indiana Public Radio on the campus of Ball State University.